Ice in his veins, Robbie's after the siren goal sinks Blue fans with his great degree of difficulty. 10 on the trot, Josh Kennedy makes the most of Fremantle's undersized defence to have a day out in Derby 51. Puppy dog no more, Tim English emerges as the most improved player in the game, smashing multiple Ruckman records. And after a sensational start to the year, Pies midfielder and vice-captain Taylor Adams joins us over the line from the Joondalup Resort. A festival of footy has just been announced, with games set to feature regularly on weeknights from rounds 9 to 12. This is the Centre Square Podcast.
And I declare the winner of the 2019 Brownlow Medal, Nathan Pye of the Fremantle Football Club.
Sheed from the mountain. Needs to be in perfect. He is. He's got the most impossible goal. From inside the centre square, Boyce kicked the goal. Boyce kicked the goal.
Well, as another round comes and goes, what another weekend of footy we saw. And after the goal siren from Robbie Gray, the Eagles won their 10th derby on the trot, as you just heard, with Josh Kennedy winning the Glendening Allen medal, I should say. And there was even a streaker who was fined $50,000 running onto the turf of Optus. Of course, thanks for joining us here on 91.3 Sport FM and the Centre Square Podcast. I have Luca and Noah next to me. And boys, what a show we have in store for us today. Current vice-captain, firstly, how are you two?
Yeah, good. I don't know if you're talking about me. I've got the vice captaincy up at the footy club, so you're probably talking about the special guest we got on. But no, I'm going good. Footy club had two wins on the weekend. Then I went to the Dockers game. It was a bit of a disappointment, but way to rub it in, 10 straight that we've lost. So I think I saw on Facebook the last time we won was the time the Giants were in Perth with the Giant exhibition they had on. So yeah, very long time ago. How are you now?
Yeah, I'm alright. Obviously still crying myself to sleep after the loss against the Eagles on the weekend. But other than that, I reckon it's probably the biggest guest we've ever had on today, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so just the player of the year and tips today, as we want as much time with that guest as we can. Before we get stuck into a bit of sad news that came out of Melbourne on Monday, that former Richmond player Shane Tuck, who put on the yellow and black 173 times, tragically passed away. So we send our full condolences to the Tuck family and his dad, Michael, who's a Hawthorn legend. So thoughts are with his friends and family, as it's really shocked the football world. But we're wasting no time here. We'll kick off with the Centre Square Player of the Year from round 7. So, Luca, when you're ready, you got the votes there.
Yeah, so, you know, there's some good performances throughout the round. A couple of guys were stiff to miss out, but we'll go in the classical 3-2-1 vote. So, three votes. We've picked Tim English this week. He's been a bit of a... He started the season as a bit of a ruckman. It sort of showed his... he had some potential to show, but I think he had 22 disposals, a goal, 7 marks, 4 tackles and 16 hit-outs and half a dozen clearances.
He's really grabbing that ruckman first ruckman role. They don't have a lot of backup on their list. So, you know, he's a bit undersized, probably needs to put on a bit more weight, but yeah, he could be anything, I reckon. He's very talented, and he was taken quite highly in the draft, from memory.
Yeah, so I guess he's shown why he was taken highly. But two votes, we've all picked Christian Petrarca. He's moving up the table now. I think he had 29 on the weekend, a goal, 3 marks, 6 inside 50s. So he could be, could be up there for a Brownlow.
Could be anything.
Yeah, if he keeps getting noticed. But
Smoky.
Yeah, if he's, the fans are certainly liking his attractive game style. And the one vote, we got Jack Steele. He made sure that St Kilda had their first win against Adelaide on Monday night. So one goal, 26 disposals, 6 tackles and big 13 clearances as well, which was, I think he had a tagger on him from time to time as well. So he's doing enough to get the ball himself. Yeah. A couple of unlucky ones to miss out. Jordan DeGoey, Adam Treloar, Patrick Dangerfield, Jack McRae, Stephen Cornelio as well, Hugh Greenwood, Luke Parker, Clayton Oliver, Josh Kennedy, Matt Crouch and Andrew Gaff.
And Sean Higgins as well. He had 36 touches and was probably the shining light in the poor Kangaroos performance. But Our second and final segment for now is the tips which Nora is in charge of.
Yes, I do have the leaderboard, which is what I will start with. So at the bottom, we've got myself and Luca both sitting on 29. I've had another stinker. I got 3, Luca got 5.
Yeah, I'm slowly working up, but the week before last was terrible for me.
Yeah, and then a big jump to the third is Ethan, who's on 37 after getting 5 as well. Cal got 7, he's on 39, and Bray, I believe, also got 7, who's on 40. So there's a big difference between me and Luca. We've got some work to do, but I reckon if you want to get 9 out of 9 this weekend, just tip whatever I don't tip.
Yeah, well, that's what we're saying off air. Whatever you go for, we'll just stay clear of that. So, yeah, what's the round 8?
Yeah, so I'll start. First game, Thursday night game, Gold Coast versus Bulldogs. This one's at Metricon Stadium. Who have we got?
Yeah, I'm going to go to the Bulldogs,
the Doggies as well for me.
I'll go to the Doggies as well.
Gold Coast!
I'll play it smart and just...
As for Cal, he's gone to the Gold Coast, so...
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I think Bray's gone to the Doggies as well.
He's gone to the Doggies, so that's 4 for the Doggies and one for the Suns.
Yeah, and then Friday night we've got GWS versus Richmond. This one's at Giants Stadium, boys.
Yeah, this is tough because Richmond's still... They're not playing their best footy. They've got a couple out.
Although, are they due to play their best footy? But
GWS has been a bit in the headlines, copying some stuff.
GWS are the favourites.
I know Brett DeLedio was very firm with his opinion on GWS at the moment. He said they're playing like a bunch of individuals, all of them.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm gonna go to the Giants, though.
Okay.
I'm going to go Richmond.
I'm going to go Richmond as well. It's hard to tip against the Tigers.
Yeah.
But first game of Saturday is North Melbourne versus Carlton. This one's at the G, or the Gabba, I should say. Ethan, who have you got?
Was that Carlton, North Melbourne?
Yeah.
Yeah, Carlton, I think, they're going to move up. And that heartbreaking result against the Power, I think that's going to, really, they would have talked about that a lot during this week and, finishing games out to the very end and making the most of the opportunity. So the Blues.
This is a big game for Carlton.
Yeah, I'm going to back Carlton in as well. Just think they'll win. So,
yep, same.
And we didn't actually say
Brian Cowell.
Cowell's for the last
Carlton
game.
Carlton for this one as
but
well.
But for the last game, we didn't actually say them. So for he's gone GWS to Cowell and Bray's gone Richmond. So splitting there.
And then for this game, they've both gone...
Both gone the Blues.
Both gone the Blues. All right, cool. And then second game of Saturday is Sydney versus Hawthorn. This one's at the SCG. Ethan?
Yeah, I'm going to go the Swans. I think a home ground advantage.
Yeah.
Everyone tipped the Hawks against the Ds last week, and they're just not there at the moment. And I think, Swans, even though they haven't been doing too well themselves, I think they'll...
Yeah, Swans for me.
I'm going to go Hawthorn. They better win, otherwise I reckon I've tipped in the last 5 games and they've lost nearly all of them.
Cal's gone Hawthorn, Bray's gone Sydney.
Okay, yep. Next game is Port Adelaide versus St Kilda. This one's at Adelaide Oval. Ethan?
Yeah, Port Adelaide. I think they're a team to beat if you're looking at the ladder.
Oh, 100%,
And even though, they've shown in the past they've got a good start off to the year and they haven't gone on with it, I think... Port's going to be too strong. St Kilda, they played at Adelaide Oval last game, played well, wasn't overly convincing against the Crows, but Port.
Yeah, I'm going to back Port in as well.
Cal's gone the upset of the week here. He's gone the Saints.
Yeah, I think Bray's back to Port as well.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Port as well after that win last week. But first game of Sunday is Adelaide versus Essendon. This one's also at Adelaide Oval, so back-to-back games for that stadium. Ethan, who have you got?
Essendon, although I wouldn't be overly surprised if Adelaide get their first W the season.
Yeah.
They've got to get a win somewhere, but I don't think it's this round, so Essendon for me.
I'm going Adelaide. I reckon they will get their first win of the season in this game. I just have a feeling.
Clubs just don't go through years without winning a game.
No.
No.
So they're going
to although I would like to see it, not for Adelaide's sake, but just like...
Yes.
In general. who have Brian?
Yeah, they've both gone the Dons.
Okay, And then... Next game is Eagles versus Collingwood at Optus. This should be a great game, really, Ethan.
Yeah, grand final rematch from 2018. They've had some really good encounters, some finals in that game last year where the Pies got up there by a point. I reckon Collingwood. I reckon they like playing well in WA, so the Pies.
Yeah, I think it's probably one of the better games that we're going to have over here in the WA hub. So, really hard to pick this one, but I think Collingwood.
Yeah, like Lucas said, very tough to tip this game. Oh, it's a flip of the coin, really, isn't it? I'm just going to go Collingwood. Yep. Collingwood for me.
And these are two of the both of the sides the boys aren't here support, so that they've just gone with their own team.
Yep, and then last game of Sunday is Melbourne versus Brisbane at Metricon Stadium. Brisbane going in the favourites. Ethan, who have you got?
I'm going to go the D's. I said it to you boys earlier.
He does like the D's.
I do like them. I'm not sure exactly why. I think they got an attractive game style, and they got good footy smarts when they're playing well. And I think they'll win.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Brisbane will win. You know, I think they're sitting second at the moment. So
be good
to see them keep playing good footy.
Yeah, Brisbane for mine as well. I made the mistake of going against them last week. Hopefully, I don't make the same mistake
so
twice.
Did I. Yeah. And yeah, both the boys go on the Lions.
Okay. Yep. And then the Monday game, which I'm looking forward to very much, is my Dockers and Lucas Dockers and Ethan's Dockers actually. Going against Geelong Cats. This one's at Optus at 6:10, so a Monday night game.
Not sure if Joel Selwood will get up to play. Jordan Clark injured himself in the game on Thursday night. They've got a few issues there.
Injuries on both teams with the Fife.
Yeah, Nat Fife's still out for another week.
See, Freo, they did win this fixture last year, didn't they?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, speaking of this fixture, this was the one last year where on the whole way up to the bus up to the game, it was, how much are we going to lose by? And then, when they got the feeling, it was the best feeling on the way back.
I remember Fife kicked two in the wet.
Three votes, did he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did get it. And, people were saying, they're going to lose by 100. What's the point? All this. Back to the tip. I'm going to go Geelong. I don't know.
It's always a great game, Fremantle versus Geelong.
They've had a good rivalry, haven't they?
Had a really good rivalry.
Since about 2012. Yeah. Maybe even 2010.
No, yeah, it was about 2010.
We won three in a row the first three games.
And, of course, that famous qualifying final win down in Geelong, where Stephen Hill kicked that winning goal and sent us basically to the grand final.
Yeah, it's always a great game. And then the one which gets forgotten about is when Walters missed that goal to win us the game. I think that was in 2016 or 17.
I'd never go away from this one. I'm going to back Freo.
Yeah, same.
And Cow's gone Geelong, and Bray, he said it, talking to him, he said it was a flip of the coin. He couldn't quite decide, but he's going to go for the home team. But just before we wrap up, the fixture for rounds 9 to 12 got announced. Now, Hawthorn Carlton are going to come to WA, and there's going to be a Sydney GWS derby, or derby, as they say over there,
Sydney,
in Perth.
Battle of the Bridge.
So that's going to be very interesting. I'm not sure if it'll be the best of games.
Oh, it's good to have another derby over here in the West, so...
Yeah, no,
I'm sure
good for
it's
the
one
WA.
We'll be attending.
Yeah. All right, well, now that's done, we're super pumped because on the other side of this break, our special guest has been good enough in agreeing to join us.
Was at the back. Can Varko get it to the goalie? Not quite. Adams does so well. What a game of footy, end to end.
It's with great pleasure that we welcome this man to the show up there in the Joondalup Resort as we speak. Pick 13 in the 2011 National Draft. 31 games with the GWS Giants from 2012 to 2013. He then came back to his home state in Victoria, where he is now playing a further 108 games for the Collingwood Football Club, being one of the most important players as well as a vice-captain for season 2020. It's midfielder Taylor Adams. Taylor, thanks so much for joining us. Welcome and congratulations on the win on Thursday night.
Hey guys, thanks very much. Thanks for having me on the podcast. Looking forward to having a chat.
Yeah, great to have you on. It was a solid performance by the boys on Thursday. But before we get into this season, we're going to go back to the start of your AFL career. And not many people would know that you were a two-club player, but you were at the Giants for 2 years at the beginning with your good mate Adam Treloar, who I think was there for a bit longer than you. But what can you remember from then, and how hard was it moving to a different state when you were so used to growing up in Victoria?
Yeah, a lot of people probably forget that I played for the Giants. I was drafted in 2011, and the Giants had picks 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13, 14. 15-6. So, going into the draft, I was, a likely chance to end up in Sydney, which was a little bit daunting at that point. Being a 17-year-old or 18-year-old, just turned 18, I was pretty pretty comfortable at mum and dad's place and been looked after by my parents, and hadn't really experienced being away from family and friends for a lengthy period of time. So that was a little bit scary, but one thing that made it a little bit more reassuring was the fact that Devin Smith, who was and still is one of my best friends, he was pick 14 in the same draft. We grew up together, both from the Geelong region. Dev grew up in Lara and I grew up just down in the beach in Torquay. Played a lot of our junior footy together, and yeah, one thing that made me feel a little bit more comfortable was knowing that the fact that there was a good chance of ending up at the Giants with me. So on draft night, it was a Thursday night up in Sydney, and we were both sitting next to each other, and yeah, to have our names read out simultaneously, that pick 13 and pick 14 was a real thrill. Obviously, a lot of high end talent in that draft, that are still running around the AFL now. And as I mentioned before, Adam Treloar was another player there. He was picked as a 17-year-old to go up there a year earlier. So he spent, I think, 5 or 6 years in the end up there. But played with a lot of guys throughout my junior career that ended up at the Giants. So a little bit daunting at the very beginning, but absolutely loved my 2 years up there. As I was saying, the draft was on the Thursday night, and on the Sunday, we actually moved up there and had our first training session on the Monday. So it was bit of a whirlwind. Flew back to Melbourne on the Thursday, on the Friday morning, packed the bags and out on the first flight Sunday morning, and all of a sudden my life was now based in Sydney. So pretty crazy 72 hours there, but I loved every minute of it.
Yeah, it would have been good to have some good mates alongside you.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So you're the captain of the Geelong Falcons and in the underage stuff. Did you always have your eyes set on going to Collingwood? Or making a return back to Collingwood, and were you certain that it was the right move after you got traded for Heath Shaw?
Yeah, you might have to turn that mic up. I think I've got the question.
Yeah.
Just couldn't hear you clearly there.
Oh, sorry about that. So you were the captain of the Geelong Falcons in the underage stuff, Taylor. Did you feel like it was the right move when you went back to Collingwood once you were traded for Heath Shaw?
Yeah, it was a decision that certainly wasn't taken lightly. I was still relatively young at the time. I was 20 years old when once the season of 2013 finished. So I played 2012 and 2013 at the Giants. And after a lot of discussion with my family, friends, my manager, made the decision to meet with a few Melbourne clubs or Victorian clubs. Went back and spoke to Melbourne, Essendon, Carlton, Geelong, Richmond. Ended up coming to the decision that I wanted to land at the Pies if that was a possibility in the trade period, and sort of based my decision off the fact that I knew Bucks already. He's actually my big country coach at under 16 level, so I had a bit of a prior relationship, albeit brief, with Bucks, and got on pretty well with him. I certainly looked at the age demographic of Collingwood's list at the time. A really successful club had basically just played him a premiership in 2010 and then a losing grand final in 2011. I think they played him brilliant in 2012 and final was 2013. And so I thought, that was still certainly in the sweet spot. You look at their list and they had, Steel Sidebottom still here, Pendles, Trav Cloak was still there when I was playing. Some real A-listers. Luke Ball was still there. Nick Maxwell was captain. So I thought that the demographic of their list, the age demographic of their list, was still in a position to challenge for a flag, and that sort of, I guess, influenced my decision on getting to Collingwood. It's obviously probably didn't play out the way I originally thought in the first couple of years. I missed finals for the first 3 years that I was at, or 4 years that I was at Collingwood. But obviously, the last 2 or 3 years have been really promising and really enjoyable in terms of our on-field success.
Yeah, so you made your Collingwood debut in the opening round of 2014 against the Dockers. In an article, it said early on you struggled to deal with big crowds until Ben Johnson gave you some advice. How much did this calm you down and lead to you playing a lot better footy in front of big crowds? Or any
effect? I probably struggled with the hype of, I guess, the footy club and the Melbourne football bubble, if you want to call it that. I certainly found my first year a little bit more difficult than I anticipated. I had a relatively strong year at the Giants the year before, finishing, I think, 8th for the best and fairest up there. And got to Melbourne, had a really good pre-season, you know, got myself super fit and super strong, had a relatively injury-free period of pre-season and felt really confident going into round one. I still remember that game against the Dockers, and you know, they were a genuine premiership contender that year. Ross Lyon was coaching them, and you know, they had a star-studded football side, and you know, goes fast. Eddie had favour at being about 70-odd points, I bet, as well. So the dream start certainly didn't happen straight away. There was obviously a lot of things happened between then and myself playing some decent footy. I was in and out of the team in the first year at Collingwood, and was able to cement myself a position in the midfield, probably towards the latter end of that season. And through basically just hard work and a bit of resilience, I was able to crack in and hold my spot more regularly. And yeah, had some really good guidance from the senior coaches and some of the senior players. And Ben Johnson was actually a staff member at Collingwood at the time, and I think it might have even been the second year that I was up there, and I was kicking the ball pretty poorly. And I remember one day I was in there, I think it might have been on a Sunday after a game, and I have no idea why John was there. Maybe he's picked up his car from a night out or something. But he crossed paths, and he said maybe just chill out a little bit more. You spend so much time out here working on your kicking, it's almost like it looks like it's playing with your head. So I don't know if it was that point on, but I certainly changed my attitude somewhat. I was always pretty bullish at how hard I trained and when I wasn't getting results. So gave me a chance to sit back and just relaxed about things and relaxed a little bit more about things and take a different approach to what I was doing on the field.
Yeah, and so now, ahead of the 2016, you joined the leadership group and were named one of the vice captains in 2017. Is this when you knew that you were well and truly established in the AFL system? And how have you developed your leadership over the years? It must be nice to get that recognition from your peers.
Yeah, I guess you're... It's funny, that's great. That's a good question. When you feel like you're worthy of being an AFL player, always sit down... that I could mix it as an AFL player. I think I'm still striving to become an elite AFL player and the best performer I can be week in, week out for a team. I don't really sit back and think, oh well, I've made it, and you know, just take the foot off the gas. But that was a moment that made me realise that all the hard work that I put into myself as a player and as a teammate have been recognised, no doubt. I think as a leader, I've learnt so much. I probably thought I knew a lot then, but I think I sit back now and realise that I haven't even really scratched the surface in that space, and that's something that I'm constantly working my way to learn more about. And there's so many experienced people, not just only around our footy club, but in the AFL circles that I now cross paths with that can embed some real strong life experiences and football experiences on me to help shape the way that I go about being a leader or a designated leader at the footy club. I'm certainly still growing in that space, but it's obviously nice to be recognised by, we're doing an internal vote, so nice to be recognised by our peers, by my peers in 2016 or 17.
Yeah, so it was around 2016 as well that Nathan Buckley was copping a fair bit of criticism as a key player and being newly appointed to the leadership position. Did you try and get around him and support him at the time? And was it really difficult?
Yeah, we certainly, no doubt. We, as leaders of the footy club, we're in constant communication with Bucks. We review every game on a Monday morning with him, and we've done that. I stepped into the leadership group, so I imagine they're probably doing that a little bit even before I was announced as a leader in the footy club. But yeah, that was obviously a really difficult time for Bucks. A player of the football club, probably, him and Scott Pendlebury are said to be the two best players of to ever pull on a Collingwood jumper. So there was always a lot of pressure. The way that he transformed from a player to a senior assistant to a senior coach was well documented. There's a lot of speculation, when Nick Mulhouse left to go to Carlton. There was just always a lot of pressure on him, and there still is being the senior coach of a massive club. And, I can't speak on behalf of myself, but I certainly knew that what Bucks was preaching and teaching as a coach was something that aligned with my values. And I thought that we were just a couple of good players away from, or even a couple of good years in developing some of our younger players away from being a genuine contender. And obviously the rest of history now, you look at his results over the last 3 or 4 years, they speak for themselves. So obviously a great decision by the club to pick him up.
Yeah, and for us that aren't on the inside, what's he like? Have you always had a healthy relationship with him?
Yeah, we've always got along really well. He's just a normal guy like you and I, just loves the game. He was once a 20-year-old who made mistakes and learnt from them. He's got, gone through plenty in his life. He was the best footballer in the country for many years, to being a father, to now being a father to 45 players. I think just like you and I, or you guys and I am, we're still on a journey to find what makes him really happy and how to become the best person that he can possibly be for family, friends and the footy club. So that's what I see from Bucks, a guy that just wants to get better every day. He's really passionate about what he does. He absolutely loves the footy club. He's got a real drive to succeed as a football coach, but he's got real empathy to show care and love to the people around him. So, we're really lucky to have him as a coach. You guys probably want to know if he's ever yelled at anyone, or I've only seen him give one space and probably at the football club, not Jared Witts, who was probably stiff to get that one, but a really, really calm guy off the field, really measured, really well spoken. So he's got all the traits of a modern-day coach.
Yeah, of course. But if we go to 2018, where despite you guys not winning the ultimate game, you guys did have a great year, but how long did it take you to get over that loss in that grand final? And does it have you come to terms with it now, or does it still lead to some sort of motivation to go that one step further this year or in the coming years?
Yeah, obviously the goal's always been to win a premiership. We got awfully close in 2018. Doesn't really motivate me, to be honest. I don't think about the game and then want to go out and lift weights or go for a run. I think that year was a really successful year for the football club, bar 2 minutes of footy. And it happened to be the most crucial two minutes of footy that we played that year, and we're allowed the Eagles to run over the top of us. And they were without doubt the best team of that year. Completely deserved to win that premiership. We learn a lot about ourselves. We learn a lot about what we're capable of. That prelim final, no one really gave us a chance against Richmond, and we're able to win that game pretty comfortably. And I think that's just that belief. More than anything, it's the belief that we take out of that year that's going to help drive us forward. And it's that experience of being able to play in finals footy. And then in a grand final, I'm lucky that I was able to do that. So it's a year I look back at really fondly, and hopefully that we were able to go one step further. But as I said, it doesn't necessarily motivate me. I'm not over it, because sometimes you think about the game, when you see a highlight, when you see Dom Shi kick that goal, and you think, wow, what if he didn't? But there's no use doing that.
Yeah, so at the end of that season, you were awarded the Bob Rose Award for the best finals year after averaging 29 disposals, 7 tackles and 5 clearances, and clearly were the Pies' best in that grand final, coming runner-up in the Norm Smith. Although it's not exactly what you wanted, it must have felt somewhat satisfying knowing you consistently performed on the big stage and there wasn't a lot more you could have personally done.
I don't know if satisfied is the right word. I just think once you get to the point in your career where you really don't care about how you play as an individual, all you want to do is do the best that you can for the team. And sometimes that's having 30 touches and kicking a goal and having things like that. Sometimes that's also not doing that and making the bloke next to you better by blocking or using communication or, you know, by being a really good teammate to play with, by being really positive. So, I think at the end of 2017, I probably finally reached that point where I was able to concede that not every game was going to be my best game and I wasn't going to be the most influential player on the ground for Collingwood. So, I sort of become satisfied by different things rather than the stats that you guys probably read at the end of a game. Now, internally, we measure, like, when I do a review with Robert Harvey, who's our midfield coach, he wouldn't have a clue how many touches I had during the game. Because it's not something that we really pride ourselves on. It's not something that really matters too much. That impact on the game is really important, but you can have impact on the game without having the ball in your hand. I think I got to that age, probably 24, 25, when I felt like I could really just let go of my individual performance and that all that mattered was how I helped the team play better. And it's a satisfying feeling knowing that you helped the team play better. And no doubt I was happy with the way that I played in the grand final, but I certainly didn't feel a sense of satisfaction because, you know, we'd fallen a tip short.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so this time last year, you had a hand injury and we often saw you wearing a glove for a bit of protection, but you were still able to sign a 5-year deal with the Pies until at least 2024. Must have been real excitement over the group and what they can achieve in these next few years for you to sign for that period of time.
Yeah, it was. Last year was a bit of a disappointing year. My body didn't really hold up. I had a finger injury early in the year where I missed first two rounds, or first maybe three rounds, which was actually an old injury. I had a sublux joint, which is basically a joint that kept dislocating, and got to a point, I heard it one day at training, where I wasn't able to pop it back into place, so required surgery to fix that. But and then went on to tear my adductor and then off the bone, which again, not a really common injury for a footballer, but something that kept me out of the game for about 11 weeks. So, my ambition was to always sign a long term deal at the football club. I just couldn't see myself playing anywhere else, and absolutely have loved my time at the footy club. So it was no brainer for me. I think the way that the team has been trending over the last 3 or 4 years, you know, the young talent we've got here, the coaching group, the support staff, the relationships that everyone has amongst the football department and the admin side of the building at the Collingwood Footy Club is something that I love. We're in a really good place at the moment. I think guys love playing for Collingwood. And it might be a little bit different to what it was like playing for Collingwood 10 to 15 years ago. There's probably different reasons why people love playing for Collingwood. It's not just necessarily the big crowds and the big games and, you know, being in a spotlight. I think it is the relationships that we have off the field now, and the care that we show for each other. And I'm happy. I just wake up every morning happy knowing I'm going to be going to training, and I look forward to that. And you're doing that in life, then, you know, there's probably nothing more that you could ever hope for.
Yeah, of course. Moving on to the strange 2020 that we're living in, how did you personally cope with isolation training in limited numbers, and what sort of things did you get up to?
Yeah, it was difficult. I missed, just speaking about the footy club, I missed the interaction between players and staff and seeing everybody down at the footy club. But pretty lucky in a sense, I had my my little brother living with me. He's 24, so he's 2 years younger than me. And he's a decent football player locally down in Geelong, and yeah, so we're able to train together, which was good. Spent a lot of time at the footy club using the oval there. Actually went away inside, fortunate, but yeah, did a fair bit of training with him. Was able to coach better up with you know, the schedule that was sent out or the program that was sent out, and I probably enjoyed the time more than I thought I would. Just yeah, now it's the time to do some things. Obviously, I've got a footy that I really like, and I actually got a puppy. I've got 2 golden retriever dogs now, and we got a puppy on the actually the first week that footy was cancelled, so I had my hands full with him.
Oh, sweet.
Got the isolation period, which was fun, but other than that, just did some. I'm doing some uni at the moment. Got a couple of gyms back in Melbourne that Levi Greenwood, myself, and 2 other business partners run. So yeah, put a bit of time into that. Obviously, they were shut down during the lockdown period as well, so that kept me relatively busy.
Yeah, nice. Could you run us through just a typical week in the life of an AFL player in isolation? What sort of training you would get up to in terms of like running, weights, recovery, yep, all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, we did try to emulate a normal week at the footy club. Monday, in our pre-season, we do Monday, Wednesday, Friday,
yep,
as our big days. So I'd start with a running football session on in the morning on the Monday, Wednesday and Friday. Usually do about between, depending on loads and what the strength conditioning guys are asking, between 8 and 13 Ks.
Yep.
So do that 3 times a week. In the afternoons on those main days, it would be usually legs weight session. And the Tuesday and Thursdays, we'd do upper body sessions, so
okay,
just weights. Yeah, so probably 5 weight sessions a week, 3 or 4 running sessions a week, and any sort of recovery you can get in, you know, mobility, stretching, head to the beach, you can jump in the water, or got a sauna at home, so jump in that. Yeah, just try to get the body feeling fresh.
Taylor Adams is with us, current vice-captain of the Pies and midfielder, if you've just tuned in. What about the state of the game? There's been a lot of talk, you know, about the congested footy and the game's not as free-flowing, there's low scores. Do you think, what are your thoughts on this with the way the game's moving forward, and do you buy into any of this?
It's not something that sits at the forefront of my mind. My initial reaction to anyone bagging the game this year is, you know, we had 8 weeks, 9 weeks off. As players, and the game, you know, we're also in lockdown. It wasn't like we were able to continue to train as a team during that period of time. It was probably longer than 8 weeks, but yeah, so the game was always going to take a bit of time to get back on its feet, and I think players are starting to feel more and more comfortable now. You know, it's been a tumultuous 5 months for everyone involved in footy, and the players aren't exempt from that, so I think we're finding getting back to playing a little bit more difficult off the back of only 3 weeks of training than what we previously would have if we had a full pre-season under our belt. So my opinion is the games, you get good games every week, you get bad games every week, and that's just the way footy is. And the reason why it talks about so much is because Twitter and these platforms provide everyone with an opinion, and these opinions aren't always right ones that everyone gets to say, and that's just the unfortunate thing about social media. There's a platform for everyone to have their opinion, so, and a lot of the time it's mainly negative. So I thought the last 2 or 3 weeks have been a lot better. I think the players have sort of found their feet, everyone's settled into sort of understand what they're going to have to go through, and we've seen some bigger scores and more free-flowing footy.
Yeah. So you're up there at Joondalup at the minute. I'm gathering you're in your room. What are the facilities like? And what I've seen a bit of Jack Crispy doing a bit of vlogging down there. So it's a pretty good setup, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good setup. Yeah, I'm actually sitting out. What's it called? It's a bit of a grassy hill in the sun at the moment. So I'm not in my room just yet. I'll go and do some uni this afternoon. But yeah, we've got a pool set up here. There's a gym here. We've got access to nine holes of golf. There's a big shared area for table tennis and big games. So everyone's doing it really well. We're pretty lucky to be in isolation in a place like this. You know, it's different to being stuck in a hotel room 2 weeks. So
we're really fortunate to be in the position we're in, and you know, guys have got access to everything they need to make sure they perform well come game day. So that's what we're asked for.
Yeah, so it's been a great start to the season for you personally. How much confidence do you have when you've got the likes of Scott Pendlebury, Adam Treloar, and even Brody Grundy right next to you? And do you feel like it gives you a bit more freedom to focus on your role that you have to play for the team?
Yeah, I think that's basically all we ask from everybody, is to play their role inside our team structure. And you know, every team has really good players, but I think the really good players, and this is what makes Pendle so good, is really good players are the ones that come back to what I was saying before, what makes the team better. And that's why Pendle is Madsy and Brody are such great players to play with, such great teammates, because you know, they've got the ability to have 30 touches and kick a goal every week, and Brody's got the ability to have 25 touches and kick a goal and have 50 hit-outs, but I think everyone just sort of does their bit, plays their role, and we all get a lick of the ice cream at times. So, yeah, obviously the team at the moment, we're going really well. We've got a really challenging game, especially against the Eagles, but looking forward to that challenge. They've had the edge against this last couple of times we've played them, so, yeah, we'll have a handful.
Yeah, there's obviously been a lot of external noise from the whole footy public in regards to a couple of incidents which have happened of late off the footy field at Collingwood, but we won't get into those. But are you one to try and block out the external noise from the media, or do you not mind listening in?
No, it doesn't really bother me. Yep. I don't. There's a lot of opinions out there. It's just up to you to pick and choose who you listen to.
Yeah.
And anyone that I don't think, you know, has the full knowledge of what's happened inside the four walls might get my time, because they're guessing or assuming or predicting. So I think that's the way that I handle it. It makes me feel most comfortable when I put my head on the pillow at night. I don't have to read into just speculation and listen to hearsay or these opinions that don't actually know what's transpired completely. So I'll find that way a little bit better to deal with it.
Yeah, so along with leading score assist involvements, clearances and tackles, I know you said you didn't really care about the stats, but you are coming 11th in the coaches' votes. I noticed you always seem to use the ball well whenever I'm watching, just like on Thursday night, I was at the game. You always seem to lower your eyes. How important is it to constantly be working on the basic skills and be able to execute them?
Yeah, it's crucial. There's so many fundamentals in our game that you need to get right, especially as a player with, I don't have the best, the most physical ability out there. I'm not the quickest, not the fittest. I've got to be really clean with you know, ground balls and first takes, and making sure that I make good use of the footy when I get a chance. So, as a kid, I was I always had a footy in my hand. My dad was always big on, you know, not necessarily having been the most competitive, or he was just more so about, you know, enjoy playing footy, but you know, also work on your left foot, your right foot, left hand handball, your right hand handball. We used to have I've never taken a stick in my life. We used to have a sticky bag at home, so we used to like looking at marking. I had two brothers, so it was always, I think, and you know, from then to now, nothing's really changed. We spend a lot of time making sure that our fundamentals are as good as we can use them as well as we possibly can, and that's what separates, you know, the best players from the guys that, from guys that aren't quite as good. You know, look at Gary Ablett, the reason why he's been so good, because he's, you know, obviously a immaculate mover, but he's also, doesn't fumble a ground ball, he's very good with his hands, he's a beautiful kick. So, every player gets the opportunity to work on those things, and, I think they're really important.
Yeah, and do you think the lockdown period helped a lot of the juniors that were in, like, talent programs and stuff? Do you think it gave them more time to just work on the basic skills and execute them properly?
Yeah, I imagine they would have been able to spend some more time doing that rather than being stuck at school. So
you guys probably
know more than I do, to be honest.
We
were sent a program, and everyone came back in pretty good condition physically and also mentally. So we were able to hit the ground running and we were able to get our training done, or solid training done right from day one. Of training, getting back started.
Yeah, so you're up against the Eagles on Sunday, who are coming off their three wins in a row. Without giving away too much, what do you think are the keys to getting a win, as they set up well on pretty much every line?
Yeah, they're obviously a quality outfit, and they've been playing some really good footy over the last fortnight. So, back on their home deck, they're back living home, which I imagine they'd be absolutely wrapped about. So, we'll have a handful. Obviously, their key defenders are pretty important for them. McGovern's given us a few headaches previously. Tom Barras and Hearn, they're all really good overhead. But then you look at their midfield, also pretty strong through there. You've got Luke Shuey, Elliot Yeo's, Nick Natnui's back playing. So, they're really dangerous there, and their forwards are equally as dangerous. They're probably the two best forwards over the last couple of years in Kenny and Daly. So, we actually haven't had any team meetings as yet. We'll dissect their game plan and come up with a way to try to beat them. We'll give us the best chance of beating them. And we're just going to go out and execute on Sunday, and hopefully we can do that and get the win.
Yeah, that's it.
Finally, before the fan questions, how long do you think you have left in the game, and what does your life look like after that?
Yeah, great question. I've got five more years to go. So right now, I really don't know. It would depend on how my body's looking. I'll be 31 at that stage. I'm 31 at that stage. So hopefully a few more. Maybe I wouldn't mind playing with 32, 33. That'd be nice. I'll have to reassess when I get to that point. I think it's almost impossible for me to predict how I'm going to be feeling at that stage. But making sure that I'm set up off the field. I'm doing a Master's of Business Administration at the moment, which just keep me busy off the field, and just basically online through Deakin Uni in Melbourne. And loving that. As I said before, I've got a couple of gyms that we just launched last year in Melbourne. So I really don't know what post footy looks like. I'm doing the NBA basically to keep my options open. It's quite a broad, you guys know what an MBA is, quite a broad brush way of doing a business course. And then I dare say after I complete that, I'll do some more study in a specific field that maybe I enjoyed throughout the NBA. So, just trying to keep my options open. And, I think that the better you set up off the field, in terms of, committing to something and getting it done and feeling like you're accomplishing something, probably the better you feel going into footy games. And that's something that I've put a bit of focus into over the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, because you said you like dealing with people in the athlete's voice, which I saw, and how it's become a real passion of yours. So you've done a bit of media on AFL Tonight and RSN. So what about media? Is that a pathway you could potentially look at?
Yeah, maybe. It's definitely an option that I'll keep open. I won't shut any doors right now, but as I said, I'm still learning. I'm still learning about what really makes me tick and what I'm going to be into then. Is a little bit unknown at the moment. Everything's open at the moment. I'll maybe ask you that question in 3 or 4 years.
So we'll move on. We got some fan questions, so thanks to everyone that sent one in. We couldn't put everyone in, so make sure to try your luck next time at Centre Square Podcast on Instagram or Facebook. There are plenty more opportunities coming up. So fairly short, Taylor. So this one's from Collingwood_FC_. Who is the best and worst player to bunk with on the road?
We don't have to bunk with anyone. We actually get our own room. So, if I had to choose, I'd choose Levi Greenwood to bunk with. I'm bunking next to, so my room's next to Jack Christian at the moment. He's playing, he's up late at night playing video games and yelling at the TV. So, if I were to have to bunk with him, I wouldn't appreciate that much.
Yeah, we might cop a feature. He's doing his vlogs, Jack Crisps. He's doing keeping pretty occupied with those. Is he on his YouTube?
Yeah, I haven't tuned into any of his episodes yet, but I certainly will be. It's I've seen him walk around the place with a camera and just I just run the other way.
Nah, good idea. All right, next one from Joshy underscore Taylor 4. Which junior club did you play for growing up?
I played for St Joseph's Footy Club down in Geelong. I played there from when I was about 13 or 14. Oh, probably a little bit younger, 12 or 13.
Yeah, nice. Next one from Hot Pies Army. Is there anything specific you worked on during this pre-season that has helped you have much more of an impact this year?
Probably everything. Always, as I said before, always looking to improve. Obviously, we focus heavily on our physical attributes, you know, speed, power, agility, robustness, you know, ability to get through games and finish games strongly. That's always a really strong feature of pre-season. I don't know, I do a lot of kicking work by myself, a lot of kicking, a lot of handball technique and repetitive work, you know, so once I get the opportunity to play, I don't fumble, try not to fumble. Yeah, that were probably the two or three main things that I was really focused on.
Yeah, so this one's from Tegan McClendon. What player has impressed you most so far this year?
What player has impressed me most so far this year? All my teammates impressed me at times, but I think Josh Dacos is the one that's really taken a step forward in, you know, his progression as a senior footballer. He's certainly seen me, he's 45 out of 22. He's probably been a bit in and out over the last couple of years, but he had a great pre-season. Performed really strongly in a lot of our match practice over the pre-season. You could really see that he had developed a little bit more strength through his body and through his legs, so he's able to probably see his real strength shine. He's a really good mover, pretty quick off the mark and uses the ball really well, so I've been really impressed with the way that he's played in the early part of the season.
Yep. All right, next one from Collingwood News. Biggest change to your lifestyle at the moment? So I think he means like inside the hub and stuff.
In the hub, my biggest change is not being able to see my family and friends and my dogs and my partner. That's probably the worst thing about this. Obviously, I don't have children, so
yeah.
I'm not as bad off. I'm not doing as badly as some of the other boys, who have children and have to be separated from them for a period of time, but. Miss being at home and being around my loved ones.
Yeah, of course.
Yep. Next one from Slay Stars. He's asking, could you talk about Will Kelly's potential to be a strong key forward and how is he coping with his injury?
Yeah, so Will's had surgery on his elbow last week and all reports he's recovering quite well. He's back in Melbourne at the moment. Yeah, he's got a battle of injury concerns over the last 2 years since he walked into the football club. And a guy that just gets the game. He really understands footy, really smart, sees the game really well, and he's got a real sense of what he needs to work on or what he needed to work on to earn himself that first game. So he's got plenty to give. He'll be a really strong contributor for us going forward over the next hopefully 10 years. I think the big thing for him is his ability to put on some weight and, you know, bulk up in the gym, and he's certainly done that, but he'll turn into a bit of a monster when he gets back in the gym, and, you know, over the next 2 or 3 years he'll put on some really strong contributor for us.
Looks really exciting and disappointing with that injury. But second last one from CFC underscore 892. Who did you idolise growing up and or try to model your game on?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was a long supporter growing up. I used to go down to Fittinger Park, it's a good stadium, and watched the Cats run around. Obviously had quite a few talented midfielders to watch down there. Jimmy Vartel was always a favourite of mine. So when he first got into the AFL, and Gary Ablett. I think they're probably the three players that I've really loved going to watch and tried to emulate some of the things that they do well in the footy field.
One from Cooper HS 2003. Has it felt any different on the field? I think it means like without any crowds or even the longer breaks between goals.
Yeah, the crowds is the big thing that we miss. I mean, 30,000 in the stands on Thursday night.
Yep.
It made me realise how good footy was. It reminded me how good footy is with crowds, and yeah, obviously can't wait to have a game where we've got 80,000 people there at the MCG or wherever it may be. But that's been the biggest thing to get used to is just the noise and the atmosphere. That we, you know, sometimes you need that atmosphere to really create, certainly miss that.
Yeah, and one thing I've just thought of, I know you probably don't care or, I suppose, mind as long as you're in the grand final, but where do you think or have an opinion on where the grand final should be? Obviously, there's a lot of debate. MCG has the history, but thoughts on the decider?
I'd probably go with the state or the venue that can hold the biggest crowd. And that's probably not a popular look at where the grand final should be from a Victorian point of view, but I just think that without the fans, the game really isn't the same. So if I had the decision, I'd probably say that.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, Taylor, we're going to have to let you go. We really appreciate your time and all the insight. Good luck against the Eagles on Sunday, as well as the rest of the season, whatever the future may hold.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Cheers, Taylor.
Cheers, Taylor.
See ya. There he goes. Taylor Adams, a terrific player and all-round great bloke, speaking so well. Luke and Noah, we'll talk next week. Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was good to be back on. So, yeah, looking forward to the next week.
Follow and like us on Instagram and Facebook if you don't already, because in a day or two from now, there will be something posted on the stories about something else we're doing on Friday for a future episode. So keep your eyes peeled out for that one. In saying that, take care, look after yourself, and we'll catch you next week on the Centre Square podcast on 91.3 Sport FM. Thanks for listening.